Hello everyone, you're listening to America Meditating Radio. We collect wisdom, inspire each other, and empower hearts on demand 24/7. I'm Sister Jenna, host of the syndicated America Meditating Radio. Join us as we talk one-on-one with leading experts who answer life's most compelling questions, because in a world of uncertainty, we need answers right here, right now. America Meditating Radio, a show for everyone to learn more about this amazing thing called life. Take a deep breath and pause for a moment. In a quiet space of my mind, I gently allow my thoughts to settle, offering me some insight into what stirs deeply in my consciousness. When I'm walking and moving around and interacting with others, I'm off guard and I forget what's sitting at the base of my consciousness. External influence can trigger internal realities. But in this very special moment, I choose to allow a sacred courage to emerge as I, the soul, travel through uncharted territories of my inner being. So in this moment, I, the energy of light, the being, the soul, give myself permission to let go of any fear that might be surfacing. Because in this state of sacred trust and sacred courage, I am not alone. In this awareness, I realize I haven't lost anyone or anything. Don't need to think too far ahead or too far behind. I am present here for me. Sitting in this state, I have the ability to overcome any fear that surfaces in thoughts. And being in this present state, there's the feeling of absolute stability, expansion, silence, peace, in a state of being fearless. In this state, I seek no desire. When I maintain my sacred courage, the past is automatically released. I'm aware. I'm a soul, a being of energy, imperishable, immortal.
Hello everyone, welcome to America Meditating Radio. That was Fearless from Inclusion Revolution Together with Love Meditation CD by yours truly, Sister Jenna. You're listening to America Meditating Radio, and it always warms our hearts when you can join us at any time during the day, 24/7, online or on TuneIn, Spreaker, iTunes, you name it. It's been a wonderful journey of 4 years, and just a week ago, we held our fourth annual America Meditating Retreat, which featured a lot of our guests from the show, and just spoke to one of our wonderful friends, Beth Grossman, and we had a heart-to-heart conversation this morning about the energy and the quality of the individuals that actually somehow resonate to be on air, to really speak from a very authentic place, to allow the light to shine, to basically share our good stories, our good news in a world that right now it's pressing on our conscience. It's pressing on our conscience to bring out and to bring forth the good that we are fundamentally birthed with. This is a rebirthing of the divinity, the grace, the beauty that we've always known we are. However, at times, maybe circumstances are a little bit too comforting or familiar, that we mix the absolute good with the absolute trying to be good part of the soul. And we come up with a lot of different stories. There is a scene at the retreat where a wonderful writer had mentioned about the whole energy of anger and how anger, she considers it to be a virtue and how it can push our stories forward. And I look at anger as in many different ways. But I think when we're talking about any sort of a disturbance of our interior peace, it has a consequence. Let's put it that way. If my peace is disturbed, if my peace feels like it doesn't make my cells in my body feel well, it's a signal that perhaps I can refine the way I'm about to say what I'm about to say or do what I'm about to do. And that's why people always say never send a message when you're emotionally charged, because what comes out of you more likely are the emotions rather than what you really, really wish to convey with love. And so I would transform the whole energy of anger into a gentle force. A gentle force that says, I will stand up for that which is good and still maintain the truth and the beauty and the divinity that I believe our world is supposed to have a narrative about. And so I invite you to consider this, because I know there's so much happening, whether it's in Hollywood, politics, religion, education, the arts, whatever it might be, things are surfacing, things that were hidden are now being revealed. And that's bringing us either to a place of renewal or readjustment or acceptance, even forgiveness. But more than anything else, it's bringing us more to a place of humility and simplicity, and perhaps moving towards more a culture of sharing our gifts with each other, and not necessarily always being in the energy of just taking and taking and taking. Don't change that dial. We're going to have a heart-to-heart conversation with Rebecca Tinsley, Network for Africa founder. And before I get Rebecca on the air, why don't we have a little bit of our moment together and rise to the occasion of living a more focused, balanced, opened, accepting quality of living. But before I go into a meditation, just want to not forget to send my good wishes to the families and the children that were affected by the shooting in Southern California recently. Boy, I really wish we could do something with this gun violence in this country. All right, take a deep breath, everyone. Here's focusing from Knowing Myself.
Focusing my thoughts, taking just a minute, sitting quietly, I become aware of my surroundings. I focus on an object in front of me, allowing it to fill my awareness, letting go of any distractions. I hold only the object in my awareness. even if I'm distracted, I gently return my focus to the object. I identify one quality of that object. I focus on this. I hold this one thought.
Welcome back. That was Focusing from Knowing Myself by B.K. Chanti Kirpalani in the UK. Rebecca Tinsley is the founder of the Network for Africa, a charity helping people in African countries who have endured genocide and conflict. In Rwanda, Network for Africa has built a hospital and dozens of houses for genocide orphans, and it runs training projects for genocide survivors as well. In Uganda and Sierra Leone, they train lay counselors who have given psychotherapy to over 11,000 former child soldiers. Rebecca has a law degree from the London School of Economics and is a former BBC politics reporter. She writes on genocide, Africa, and international development. In her book, Star Falls to Earth, is a novel about Africa. Today we welcome Rebecca Tinsley to the air. Hi, Rebecca.
Hello. Hi.
Thank you so much for the work that you're doing in Africa. It's so needed. And I have to tell you this, Rebecca, it blows my mind how a soul can become so disconnected from love and truth when we hear the stories that are taking place in countries like Africa today. What was it that inspired you to get more active in doing humanitarian work, especially in Africa?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for inviting me onto your show. It's an honor.
Thank you.
I was invited by a friend of mine, who's a politician, to go to Rwanda in 2004, and I went as a journalist. But the things that I saw, stories that I heard from survivors, made me realize it wasn't enough to just catalog and write articles. I had to do something. And the moment that everything changed for me was when I met a young woman who was 14 years of age. She had lost her parents. She'd seen them, you know, killed in front of her during the genocide. And she'd ended up living on the street. But she was taking care of four other young orphans. She had become their mother figure. And I interviewed her, and thankfully, later we were able to build a little house for her in what's called a child-headed household. But the turning point for me was when she said to me, I'm not a victim. Don't ever call me a victim. I'm a survivor. And I thought, how wonderful that you can feel no self-pity, that yes, you want a helping hand, but you are a survivor, and that's how you define yourself. And her resilience and her resourcefulness inspired me. You know, I also have to say that I think when you look at our privileged Western world, we do seem to value African lives less, and we kind of look on the continent of Africa as if it's hopeless and as if somehow all the news coming out of it is bad. But I have to tell you that 2/3 of Africa doesn't have AIDS. 2/3 of Africa doesn't have a war. 2/3 of Africa doesn't even have starvation. And, you know, 2/3 of African parents get up every morning and want only the best for their children, who they give breakfast to and send to school. And I thought, well, you know, if there are people there who define themselves as survivors, not victims, then how can I not want to give them a helping hand?
Rebecca, how beautifully said. And I could sit with you for hours and hours to talk more about that transformation that happens in us when we witness someone who really started out with broken pieces and in some way or the other, you know, took that inner strength to make good with whatever pieces they had left. Before I go into the second question of our conversation, my producer is signaling, if it's possible, if you could just speak a little bit away from the mouth of the phone. They're getting a lot of feedback.
Of course.
Can I ask you, you know, sometimes it's hard for us. I mean, I'm half African, half Indian. I was born in Jamaica and raised in the U.S. since I was 4. I've been here for over 47 years. So I get an idea of, and I've been to 90 countries. So I've seen a lot. What happened in you when you really sat with her and heard her stories? That could you remember what those thoughts were that were triggering inside of you that really made you felt like, you know what, there's so much more I can offer in my life?
Well, first of all, I didn't really think that I had anything to offer because, you know, I'm a white person who has never known hunger or danger or discomfort. You know, I grew up in a house where you just turned on the tap and there was water, where you just turned on a light and there's electricity. And to me, that we are the most privileged people in the world, that we have that, that, you know, that you don't live in a village where at any moment, you know, some bandits or militia can come over the hill and kill you. You know, I grew up in the incredibly comfortable Toronto. And I thought, well, how can I possibly be useful? But, you know, I met a young woman in Darfur in the middle of the genocide there, and she said to me, you have to be our voice. And I said to her, I can't be your voice, you know, because I am white, because I am privileged. And she said to me with utter simplicity, but you're here and no one else is. So, you know, God burdened my heart in a way, and a mixture of guilt and honor and gratitude that told me I had to do something.
I love that. I love that. Let's talk about your organization, Network for Africa. It runs projects in countries that have gone through a lot, especially genocide. Could you let our listeners know just a little bit about the mission and how it got started?
Certainly. As I said, I went to Rwanda in 2004, and I met a lot of really profoundly inspiring people. And the reason that Network for Africa focuses on genocide specifically is to me, this is the big one, genocide. It isn't like loads of people killed in an earthquake. Genocide is has a political source. Yeah, it is politicians using propaganda to manipulate human beings, to manipulate people, to dehumanize their neighbors to the extent that they can kill them. And it is always for political means that they do that. And there are political solutions. And I thought, to me, this is the really big one in my mind. This is what we do to each other. And that is why it is so utterly inexcusable that we keep doing it from, you know, the Holocaust onwards, the Armenian genocide, what's happening in Darfur, what's happening in Syria right now. We keep doing it. And the more I looked into this, the more I found that a lot of people in countries like Rwanda were not getting better, if you like, in time, despite the fact that we, the West, go there and we put aid into these countries and we try and train people to do good things. But here's the thing, if you are enduring post-traumatic stress disorder and you have flashbacks every day, it is pointless trying to train you to be a farmer or a hairdresser if you are constantly reliving the horror. And so Network for Africa really is focusing on training local people to be psychotherapy counselors. And in this way, we use what's called the cascade system. That is, you train one group of people and they go away and train other people who then train other people. And in that way, we've managed to reach thousands and thousands of former child soldiers and genocide orphans and other survivors. And I think this is a good model because you're using local people, and who better knows what it has been like to go through a genocide than a survivor? And again, bringing in a bunch of white people to try and do this, there are all kinds of cultural and language barriers, you know, and you know, we can't possibly be able to do a good job. But what we can do is do the initial training. And so that's what we've been doing in Rwanda and Uganda and Sierra Leone. We basically train local people to be psychotherapy counselors. And, you know, I realized we were getting somewhere with this when after just a few days of our first pilot project, a woman came up to me and said, I have had the first decent night's sleep in 20 years because of what you taught me yesterday. And I thought, and she said to me, now I am ready to learn hairdressing or farming.
I love
thought,
that.
Oh, this is good.
I love that. I love those stories. And you know what I love more about it is how we are really just allowing something in the soul, something good that's just surfacing. And when we see the impact that it has on people's lives, I don't know if you were on the air earlier, but I was sharing how we generally host a retreat at our retreat facility in New York. And one of the things that all of us behind the scenes made a solemn swear to do is to keep it as authentic and true and pure as we possibly can, because sometimes you get caught up in the organizing, the funding, the this, to make sure everyone's happy. I says, despite whatever's happening, let us stay true, because this is to serve our souls too. And I wanted to emphasize that to everyone listening on, because we're having a real heart-to-heart conversation with the incredible Rebecca Tinsley from Network for Africa, and also author of a new book, When the Stars Fall to Earth, where, you know, it's time for us to respond to certain things that we don't feel seem right for the human spirit, and to respond perhaps from a way in which we have abilities. We can have a limitation of the color of our skin, culture, background, but the heart has no limits. It has no color, it has no gender, it has no status, it only has power. And I do believe this with all my heart, everyone, that if we allow this energy, which I call grace, love, power, God, divinity, to keep flowing through us, we can do so much more for one another than to wait only on leadership to make our lives better. I want to go back to you, Rebecca, about your third novel, When the Stars Fall to Earth. It's based on interviews with the courageous survivors of the genocide in Darfur. Any stories that really stood out for you that you could share with us that we could look forward to hearing? And what was it that got your fingers on and holding a pen and on paper to put this together?
Well, I went to Darfur at the height of the killing in 2004. I was the only journalist there at the time. I was in a refugee camp for several days, and it was just me and hundreds of women. And they wanted to tell me their stories, and they were very clear that I had to take their stories away and be their voice. And so I listened to people telling me about what they had just been through. They were all black Africans in Darfur being killed by their own government because they are black African. The outrageous thing here is this is Muslims killing Muslims because they're the wrong kind of Muslim. They're black Muslims rather than Arab Muslims. So these women, I remember one particular young woman called Zara, and she was 17, and she told me about how the soldiers, the government soldiers, arrived in her village one morning at dawn, and there was a thunder of the hoofs, horses. They attacked the village. They burned down all the houses. They killed all the men. They raped the women, and they threw the babies on fires. And Zara only escaped because she acted dead. She pretended to be dead. She then walked for 3 weeks to get to a refugee camp. And when she got to the refugee camp, they gave her a UN refugee card, and they pointed at a piece of ground, and they said, that's yours. Now you have to go and build your own shelter. And, you know,
oh,
she
wow.
was exhausted and dehydrated and pretty shaken. And it only she only revealed to me several days later that she had, of course, been gang raped, because it's incredibly difficult for a woman in a traditional Muslim conservative society to talk about rape. But she had been raped. And she told me that the person who raped her said to her that they were having three genocides. The first was when they killed the men. The second was when they raped the women, because they knew that would destroy their traditional society. And the third was when they realized that they'd given them HIV, and that their children would be, the children born of rape would have HIV as well. And yet, despite this amazing story that Zara was telling me, which was absolutely typical of the other girls and women in the camp, she was hopeful. You know, she was determined that she was going to somehow rebuild her life, and there was hope. And as long as there is hope, you know, there is something that you can do. She told me extraordinary stories about how the UN peacekeepers, you know, that we have sent out to places like Darfur, how they literally turn their back. They turn the other way when women are being raped. You know, they don't want anything to do with it. She told me awful stories about how every time she had to leave the camp to get firewood for cooking, she was being raped by the very soldiers, you know, who had terrorized and killed her family. And yet, I watched her interacting with the other women in this camp, and there was something beautiful about the way they realized that working together, they could be stronger. You know, there was
absolutely
strength. And that they owed it to the relatives never to give up hope.
Rebecca, what have you been learning with working in this area? You know, privately in your quiet moments, when you do your life reviews or you hear a song or you see something on the news or on TV or just someone's face, when you reflect inside, what is it that you've learned most about seeing what you've seen with genocide and dealing with some of the stories that you've had to encounter?
One of the things I've learned is that women are the agents of change in this world, that women in so many parts of the world, they don't really have a stake in society because men have raised them to think that they're worth nothing and ground them down and don't give them any rights, not even the right to the custody to their own children, incidentally, in large mm-hmm. parts of the world. And yet the women are the ones who have a stake and wanted to change that. And, you know, you really have to see the face of a woman who you have just taught to read and write. And it is like it's just a flowering, you know, and she suddenly realizes the power in her. You've opened a whole window into her life, her soul, and she gets self-confidence. Also, the women working together, as I've said, offering each other mutual support can achieve so much more than a woman alone or in a miserable marriage. And that's why one of the things Network for Africa does is when we have trained these survivors of genocide, we get them working in women's business cooperatives because that way they can be strong together. I think the other thing that I think about is that we cannot do this without taking men along for the ride. And therefore, we teach what's called positive masculinity. We find positive male role models within the society we're working in, and we get them to teach the men. Because believe me, you know, unless you convince a man that family planning is a good idea, it's pretty futile teaching his woman, because the first time she tries to use family planning, he'll just beat her. So you have to take the men along. I think the other thing that I've learned is you've got to be humble and listen to people rather than trying to impose a Western white idea of how we think they should sort of change.
Yes.
And what I've learned is that although people may be illiterate, it does not mean that they're stupid. It just means they didn't get a chance to go to school. But very often, they really do know the solution to their problems. And quite often, the solution is quite simple, like building a latrine or getting some clean water to their village. And so I think, in my moments when I try and reflect, I try to be humble and not to impose what I think is the solution, but to learn to listen.
Right. That's beautiful. That's fantastic. And it's an important tool nowadays. I think if we can really listen especially from a level of empathy and compassion, the growing curve is just enormous. As we conclude our beautiful conversation and very heartfelt moment together, what's your wish for humanity at this time?
Oh, gosh. I would really love it if the Western world would stop looking at Africa and thinking that African leaders represented African people, because they don't. African leaders are a tiny, corrupt group of elite who really, in most cases, really don't care about their people at all. And we in the West are just idiots to hand over money to these corrupt people running these countries. I remember a guy in Kenya saying to me, why on earth do you give aid to the people who oppress us, who take the money that's meant for schools and buy themselves Mercedes. You know, why?
Yeah,
why
big mansions.
Exactly. And I think, you know, we in the West need to learn. I mean, I don't know whether you're old enough to remember when we used to turn a blind eye to the appalling things that countries did just because they were on our side against the communists. But we're now in that situation again that, you know, we turn a blind eye as long as a country says to us, oh, we're on your side in the war on terror. We're so desperate to pretend that we're in some big alliance with loads of other countries. But we were literally, I mean, we're delusional. We believe what we want, what we're told. And I just wish that people would stop being so naive about this and start applying really a spectrum of human rights to the countries that we support. Because believe me, the people in those countries would thank us. They really would, rather than just propping up dictators here, there, and everywhere.
Rebecca, thank you so much for your wisdom, love, compassion, empathy, and I wish you really all the best for Network for Africa and also for the book. Where can our listeners find more information about your work, and do you ever come to the States?
I do. I'm happy enough to spend 3 months a year in beautiful Santa Barbara, California. I would urge everybody, please, I'm a volunteer, and Network for Africa has tiny costs and overheads, but we do need to raise money, and every copy of my novel that we send goes towards, the money goes towards our work in Africa. So please go to Amazon, buy When the Stars Fall to Earth. But also please visit our website, which is networkforafrica.org, and that's network four with the number four, africa.org. And I would be hugely grateful for every donation is much appreciated. And I want to thank you also, Sister Jenna, for our conversation today. It is wonderful to be able to reach out to people who are empathetic.
Definitely. Thank you very much, Rebecca Tinsley, and all the very best.
Thank you.
It's such an interesting time, isn't it, everyone? This whole area of leadership where, you know, some leaders were servers, and they somehow got caught up in the greed and the power and the insecurity of wanting to stay in power. And it's like now, you know, everyone is being called, rise up from within, rise up from within. Get yourself together, educate yourself, protect yourself, forge forward, don't stay silent, keep pushing, keep pushing, keep pushing, keep pushing, please. As this difficult as it can be, don't give up, keep pushing through. It's not about waiting for leaders or anyone else to help us through. Never was, actually. It was always about our own interior leadership and our own sense of courage and dignity, and to see how we can even attract the similar type of vibrations into our midst to help us to overcome some atrocities that historically we've had way too many of these narratives in our lives and in our stories. Please visit networkforafrica.org. That's network number 4, africa.org. And look out for Rebecca Tinsley's book, When the Stars Fall to Earth. As you know what it's like when you're a nonprofit foundation doing really good, I always recommend if a million people just offer $5, it can make a difference. So don't say you can't support a good cause. Antonia and I, our producers, always have a joke. I says, I'm waiting to see someone leave $1 million at our door. Or you know what's better yet? A million people to just say, I care, and give a dollar. That's all it takes for us to keep helping each other and sharing our interest and our care. Sometimes you feel like you can't help, but you can. 1 million people offer just $1. It will help an organization to continue to do the good that it's doing. Thank you so much for joining us today on the air. And remember, no one can take away your happiness unless you give them permission, and we really are here to love each other the same. So let's do that, and here is What's Going On by Marvin Gaye. Don't forget to go out and get your copy of Inclusion Revolution, Together with Love, by yours truly, me. Take care, everyone. Bye.